And now, the thrilling continuation of the SML podcast.
Yeah, man, sorry. We got a lot of bulky computers and a switch. For some reason, a network switch that sounds like an opera singer. Just constantly going, constantly holding like a G note. Or that's seriously, that is exactly it.
I am an opera singer.
Wow.
No, I'm not.
It's good to have something to fall back on.
Joe is a failed rap artist. We don't talk about that, Pappy.
We don't talk about that.
What time is it where you guys are?
It is 8 p.m. for me.
Gosh.
It is 5 p.m. for Pappy.
Yeah.
That concludes the interview portion of this.
Yeah, we're done here. That's my question.
What's up, everyone? This is Joe.
I'm Pappy.
This is the SML Podcast, episode number 170, and we are joined by a special guest today, calling from far down south where it's tomorrow. Ed Orman, is it? Orman?
Orman. Welcome Orman. To the future.
How are you, Ed?
I am well. It is my lunchtime. We've established what time it is for you. It's my lunchtime, so for lunch I'm having a cup of coffee.
That sounds like a wholesome lunch.
Delicious.
So tell us a bit about who you are and what you do and why you're on our show.
So I am one of the three founders of a mobile games company originally called Uppercut Games. We've since moved into console and PC games as well. I guess my history is like way back when I used to work for a company called Irrational Games, which became 2K Games and made Bioshock and a bunch of console titles like that. And then we quit and started our own company, and now we're just doing whatever the hell we feel like.
Sounds good. What led to the collapse of Irrational?
Oh, well, that's a long one. I don't have one reason. I got a bunch of things that I could sort of speculate on. Because Irrational, of course, when I joined, it was an independent company. And then they got purchased by 2K, I want to say 2003 or something, 2004, I can't quite remember. And 2K is a large American company. And this is all in Australia, by the way. Obviously, there's multiple Irrational studios. There's one in Boston and there was one in Canberra. And then when 2K took over, things, you know, we got a bunch more money, but things became a bit more corporate and a bit harder to work with. And then I worked on a game called XCOM, which is not the XCOM that has come out by Firaxis. I worked on that game for like 7 years. This was the first person sort of shooter reimagining of it. And that project was just dogged with all kinds of problems. And after 7 years of working on various versions of it, me and Andrew and Ryan all got jack of 2K and quit. Started our own thing.
And now you're Uppercut Games.
Now we are. We've been going for 5 years, which is without collapsing in on ourselves, which is our, we're pretty happy with that.
Well, happy fifth anniversary to you for not dying yet. And we just celebrated three, so we're catching up to you.
Yeah, you're doing well.
Although I'm surprised that we haven't folded yet. We are terrible.
Every day is a new opportunity to fail.
Indeed. And we fail daily.
Talk. Yeah, Bebe, speak for yourself. I can't even English. Of course I'm successful.
Mm-hmm. You can't
especially
English.
Especially important for a podcast.
Yeah,
we try. It's an admirable effort on our behalf.
Yeah. I spent all day looking for jobs as an English teacher for my second career. I know words good.
Yay. Well, where you're moving after military, you won't need the use of proper English because you'll be in Berwick. And no
the only options, though, in the whole state is Philadelphia or a prison for at-risk children.
Jeez. But Yeah, it doesn't sound like a lot of options.
Yeah, when the byline is like, we want people who are hardworking and motivated and willing to go above and beyond, that basically means to me, the last four people quit.
Mm-hmm. You're going to get stabbed.
Yeah. But enough about...
go above and beyond.
But enough about my fun.
So how many times have you been stabbed developing games?
Developing games? Not once. We did end up in a fist fight once at... when I say a fist fight, we got attacked by two drunk dudes who punched us at lunchtime at an old studio. That was fun.
Wait, this sounds interesting.
Hey, yeah, because I want to know how these people were drunk at lunchtime.
Oh, well, we were talking about Canberra, so Canberra, Australia. No, we just walked up the street to get a hamburger and were set upon. And I got my sunglasses smashed off my head, and a good friend of mine who was a programmer got punched straight in the nose, which immediately bled everywhere. It was fun, and then those two guys wandered off, and the police arrested them, so, you know.
So it wasn't a robbery or anything, it was just, hey, let's go punch those dudes.
It was just two angry drunk guys.
Drunken shenanigans.
Yeah. But that's probably, that's the most aggressive game dev story I think I've got.
But those aren't even harmless shenanigans, those are dangerous shenanigans.
Yeah, I lost my sunglasses.
Seriously, I mean, I got like a $120 pair of Oakleys. If someone broke those on me, I'd be pissed.
I think I was more shocked to be punched in the head, to be honest.
It sounds like if you're going out for lunch and you're just randomly punched, you're more confused than angry.
Yeah, it was. It took me a while.
Like, why did that happen, and what is happening?
Like, that was like in middle school gym, Joe. Mike something. Some kid dared him to punch me in the face. He punched me right in my braces. So he gashed open his knuckles, and I had like a tiny little cut, like just this tiny little cut on my lip, and I think he needed stitches.
That is fantastic. Yeah. How don't I remember that story?
Dude, that was like 6th or 7th grade.
Back in the day.
It's not a very violent profession, as far as I've experienced anyway.
So no murders yet, huh?
You're more worried about caffeine overdose on a daily basis, right?
Yes, or underdose.
That is the worst kind of dose. Just enough caffeine to be awake, but not enough to be happy.
Mm-hmm. Yay.
That's why I just mainline nowadays.
Instead of heroin, it's just pure caffeine right into the vein.
Tap a vein, pour that soda in. Let's do this.
God.
Monster energy directly into the vein.
You know, you can actually buy pure caffeine.
Really?
Ooh, that sounds pure like powder. A bad idea.
There was an NPR story on it just yesterday. It was really funny because the guy's like, oh, describe it for the listeners. It's like, oh, it's a bag about the size of a playing card. And the guy's like, yeah, don't touch it. Don't get any of it on you. That's pure caffeine. That's a lethal dose for hundreds of people. And the guy's like, you know, your coworker brought me a cake. And you're bringing me a lethal dose of caffeine.
Wow.
But so you can actually buy powdered caffeine. And that's how they caffeinate products that aren't naturally caffeinated. They actually, and that's how they make decaf. So there you go. We learned things on today's podcast.
Indeed. It sounds like we should set ourselves up with an enema. And just flush the system out.
Oh my God. A caffeine
pure
enema.
Caffeine.
Oh my God!
From what I understand, it's very effective. You're whatever the word is for inside the sphincter, it actually is super absorbent. That's how people have actually gotten drunk. They'll actually just soak something in alcohol and shove it up there, and it's 10 times more effective and faster than the digestive system.
Yeah, that's how people get drunk without drinking.
Yeah, it was a comedy site. A guy did it for comedy, so he did Red Bull, coffee, and beer on three separate occasions and reported on it. And of course, with the beer, he's like, since I know where the beer's going, I'm not worried about taste, so I just bought some Miller Lite.
I'm just curious how you, like, what's the proper mix of that powdered caffeine? Is it like Kool-Aid where you just pour it in and then, like, four envelopefuls of water and that's enough?
Maybe you just do it like Coke. You just snort it and then, you know, rub your teeth.
Maybe.
Jeez. That sounds like that could hurt.
So
I guess you'd have to... Yeah, go for it.
I was going to say, we should probably talk about the game that you developed instead
of... Is there any caffeine in it?
How many envelopes of caffeine are required for it? Which ones? Submerged. That's the one we need to talk about.
Yes, we
it's
we
a
shall.
Very meditative game. I'll say that you might not need caffeine. It's almost like meditating.
It is. It's the exact opposite, I guess, of that. That was the whole goal when we set out to create it, was to make we call it relaxed exploration because somebody else called it that, but I always like that. The whole point was to make somewhere just really serene and nice that you could hang out in.
That's a really good name, relaxed exploration.
I know. Yeah. I wish I'd come up with it, but it was actually a games journalist in Australia who came up with that one.
Oh, did he trademark it yet?
Credit where credit's due. Did you guys get a chance to play much? I know I only got you the codes.
I managed to squeeze some time in today. Unfortunately, mm-hmm. Joe hit me up yesterday just as I was going to bed. So
at
I
like
played some
5 day. P.M. You puss.
Yeah, I slept for 12 hours last night. Come at me.
Oh, God.
Yeah, exactly. I just walk into work, but I got 12 hours of sleep last night, and everyone just calls me an asshole. I got to play your game today, though, and I've never been so excited to find a card with four squiggly lines on it before.
That's awesome. So that's the way we chose to tell the story this time was trying to make something that was a bit more ambiguous, that is open to interpretation, but also drives you on to, you know, collect all of it so that you can figure out what the hell has actually happened in this world.
Yeah. For the people who don't know what the game is, do you want to give us a quick synopsis? Give us the sales pitch of the game?
Sure. So, it came out in August last year, so I'm actually rusty. Submerged is, as we've been saying, it's a relaxing game where your goal is to find all of the supplies that you need to heal your brother. You play as this girl called Miku, and she's arrived in this bizarre sunken city that's, you know, submerged underneath water. And you've arrived with your injured brother, and her goal is to find the supplies so that she can bring him back to health so that they can leave. But in doing that, she travels around in a boat and has to climb the buildings and actually find the buildings that have the supplies that she needs. So it's just a mixture of exploration and narrative, and it's meant to be a very ambient and serene sort of experience.
Except for those damn dolphins.
some people react really differently. Like, did you encounter the whale too?
Yeah, I found the whale I found four of the eight creatures.
Okay, I think it's a fairly natural thing, I guess. A lot of people get very scared by the whale, and we had a lot of testers literally just gun the boat and run in the opposite direction when they saw the whale.
I found the dolphins. I was like, oh, that's really cool, a pod of dolphins. And now I just like, okay, now they're stalking me.
They won't go away.
So what I do now is I gun it towards a building and then watch the dolphins leap out of the water and into the building.
Slam into the building.
Yeah.
Well, all the creatures are part of the mystery of what happened here too, though. So, you know, like if you've seen the whale, you'll know that it's not like a normal whale. And if you've seen the dolphins, you'll know there's something maybe a little bit off about them. And that mystery sort of is unraveled over the course of the game.
Yeah, I'm assuming Joe beat it, but I just got to the point now where it's like, okay, now I have to play more of this.
I actually didn't beat it yet because I've been too busy exploring.
I found four of the supplies, so I got the cutscene, and now I'm like, now I got to play more and find out what's going on.
Yeah, I think I have seven of them. I just got the cutscene where.
Spoil it.
I'm gonna spoil it for you because I don't like you. There's just a cutscene where like some of the humanoid looking things are
just
near you,
boss.
And you
call
wake
the
up.
Boss, man.
But nothing's there. Mm-hmm. But
we call them remnants. All the creatures are called remnants.
Remnants. That's a good name.
Yeah. I like Mossmen.
And like I say, how they got there and what their motivations are is the sort of stuff you discover over the course of the game. So there's a few different storylines sort of going on, right? There's the story of the city and what happened to it. And that's, you know, we've got the hidden objects all over the world. And every one of those is a little piece of that. Then there's a story of what happened to Miku and Taku to bring them here. And then there is the story just going forward about, you know, what's going to happen to them.
Yeah, and I found enough of everything to have a sneaking suspicion that every story is depressing.
I was going to say, this is not a happy game, but it is a beautiful game.
Yeah. Or the story of the 26 submerged boats that you can find to take the motors. Like that. I just assume there's 26 dead bodies under the water now.
Well, yeah, when you've got an entire sunken city. I mean, it's a post-apocalyptic setting, so it's not, it's not a happy land.
It is gorgeous, though.
It really is. That's this is one of the first games where, like, I've climbed areas and I would just stop and look around because it's just gorgeous. The last thing I could remember doing that is Rise of the Tomb Raider, where I would just like walk into a new area and just be like, "Wow, this is this is party."
That's awesome to hear, because that was I've said this a few times before, but like one of the motivations for doing it this way was I've played a lot of games, especially modern games, but even over the last 7 years, 10 years, where people put so much effort into the world and you don't really get a chance to appreciate it. And Bioshock 1 was the first game I worked on where I had that feeling. Was like, I just really, there's so much world building going on in there. I just wanted to be allowed to just stop and look.
But you can't because there's crazy people.
Yeah, there's people trying to kill you all the time. So that was one of the motivations for this. But I should also say it's our first Unreal 4 game. Everything else we've done before this as a company was Unreal 3, and then way back when Bioshock was Unreal 2, well, 2 plus some major changes. So we've been working with Unreal for a long time, but Submerge was our first Unreal 4 game, and that pretty much allowed us to push the visuals pretty heavily, which has been great.
Yeah, it is. It is just stunning to just explore. I know. What are your thoughts on the critical reception of the game? Because it seems that there's either the camp that loves it or the camp that's like, "Why is this a thing?"
Yeah. No, that's pretty accurate. Polarizing is the word we use. You know, it's just been super polarizing, and all of the negatives, I take those on board, because I think our failing probably in creating this game was communicating to people before they played it or before they even bought it exactly what kind of game it is. I think it looks in a lot of the screenshots like a particular kind of game that people are used to, and because we've departed from that, that was really on us to make sure people understood. Look, it looks a bit like Tomb Raider, and it looks like you've got the climbing and things, but there's no combat in the game, and it's meant to be a relaxing experience. We tried to get that across, but I think we could have done a better job of that.
Do you think people saw the Revenants or the Moss Men, as Pappy likes to call them, and in their mind they're just like, "Oh, this is a zombie game. I'm going to have to kill things." And then when they play it, they have the wrong impression when they get into it.
It's a little bit of that, but it's also the descriptor of survive has been, you know, that's owned now by survival games. So, you know, when we're trying to talk about a struggle to survive in a narrative sense, people, I think, read survival and they expect to be going in and crafting, you know, like a sword and crafting their axe and you know, doing all those things that are typical to survival games now. And I think that's probably where more of the negative stuff came from, because we get a lot of, "Hey, you should add this, you should add this, you should add this," sort of responses.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I think it makes it a lot more interesting. There's like, okay, here's a game that you just straight up do not perform any combat. It's just, it's like a mystery exploration game in the vein of the old Myst, you know. I mean, you know, no violence, no puzzles, I mean, but still that very haunting, unravel the story of where you are and just look around.
Well, and there are games that preceded us that I think people may not like them, like Gone Home. I think there's a small section of the gaming community who just don't like walking simulators, as they're called, or whatever, but I think they did a better job of, you know, people knew what that game was like before it came out. And I just think that's where we probably stumbled a bit.
Would you consider your game a walking simulator?
It's no. not quite, no. And that I think that's another problem, was defining exactly what kind of game it is for people ahead of time.
Because I'll be honest, some regards it made me think of Shadow of the Colossus.
Mm-hmm.
You know, in that, you know, most of the game, well, in this case, all of the game is just climbing things, mm-hmm. getting places. That's your goal. Get places to unravel the mystery of why you're in this place in the first, you know, in the first place. There, I've abused that word enough.
It's just instead of a colossus that you're climbing, it's an old flooded hotel.
Yeah. Which, amusingly enough, that was the only achievement I've unlocked so far. I inadvertently visited all the hotels.
Well done. Well, yeah, absolutely. Shadow of the Colossus was one of the inspirations, mostly from the climbing point of view. But I think maybe a more accurate descriptor of the building and climbing section is mazes. You know, like, people understand what a maze is, because that's what each one is. That's the kind of puzzle each building is. It's a maze, and you need to figure out, you know, how to get from A to B. But I think the real struggle is just that that removal of combat and death. Like, you know, you can't fall off the buildings. I don't know if you figured that out yet, but, you know, you can't, Miku can't die. The game is not about death.
No, I
or
tried.
So right.
Yeah,
of course you tried.
Yeah.
Finally, people... Pappy, a game that you can't die in, no matter how hard you try to suck at it.
I did. I just had to make sure.
Yeah. I think a lot of people tried to smother Taku as well. Like, hey, I wonder if I could kill my brother.
Well, it's but I think there's definitely a place for these kind of games. I mean, you look at the success of Journey, you know, another game that has absolutely no combat whatsoever. Mm-hmm. You know, and it, and honestly, I played Gone Home. I like Submerged better.
Well, Gone Home is just the most recent. Well, not most recent. It's just it's an easy example, I think, to point to. And Dear Esther was before Gone Home. I guess the point is there is plenty of room for a lot of different types of experiences.
Yeah.
You just need to communicate what they are beforehand.
Because I just pulled up a list of, like, you know, other non-combat games. They've got Journey on there. And then they put Limbo on there, and I'm like, it might not be non-combat, but it's pretty damn brutal.
There's a lot of dying in Limbo.
There's an awful lot of death in Limbo.
Yeah, it's like, maybe non-combat's the wrong idea there, guys. It's not that you can't fight; it's that you can't fight anything trying to murder you because you're a tiny little boy.
But you can trick things into getting killed on your behalf. Like, it's a bit,
But no, I mean, Submerged is just—it's a gorgeous game with an actual interesting story. So I think, I feel like I'd have no problem explaining it to people, and if that's their genre, they'd pick it up in a heartbeat. You know, like, hey, do you want to get a great story without worrying about having a heart attack every 8 seconds because something's trying to stab you?
I really do like relaxploration. That is so fitting for what it is.
Yeah, because there's a time for every type of game. You know, when you want to kill things, you have plenty of options. But I actually think when you don't want to kill things, you've got a lot less options. And a lot of the games in, you know, that relaxation genre, they tend to be very repetitive or kind of boring, and I'm not getting that out of yours.
That's nice. And look, I think that speaks to the positive reviews that we got and the positive feedback we've gotten from people who really love the game is exactly that thing. It's that, you know, we get a lot of, hey, I play Call of Duty, but I like to wind down by playing this, you know, or
go ahead.
No, I was just gonna say sometimes, you don't always just want to be smashing and killing things. And I like smashing and killing things games as much as the next guy. But sometimes you want something different.
Yeah, it's like, hey, I really need to take some stress out. I'm gonna play Gears. Gears of War and just chainsaw things. But most people don't go, yeah, I really want to just wind down for a little bit and relax before bed. I'm going to play some Gears of War. You know, that generally, if someone says that, I'm going to avoid them because they're potentially a psychopath.
Pappy, don't forget that we do a podcast where the most frequent answer to what do you play to unwind
is
Dark Souls.
No, it's what do you play when you're not making your game.
Relax when you're not working. What do you play to? And it's Dark Souls.
Well,
so.
I like to think that gamers are not, or game creators are not sociopaths or psychopaths. They're just really masochistic.
Yeah, I like to think we're not sociopaths too.
But boy, you're wrong.
But you're denying the masochistic part, or you're not denying the masochistic part. So.
Yeah, I got to say, out of the two camps, the love it or hate it, I think I am firmly in the love it camp. I was unsure of what to expect when I got into it, because every time I'm like, oh, yeah, I'm going to be interviewing the guy from Submerged and I'm going to be playing through the game, the people would either be like, oh, man, I love that game. It's just a really calm, relaxing game. And then other people are like, that's the most boring fucking game I've ever played in my life. And I wasn't sure what to expect getting into it, but it clicked with me, because I'm one of those guys where when I'm playing an RPG or when I'm playing an action adventure game, the first thing I do when I hit a new area is explore it. Like, what's hidden over here? What's hidden over here?
I can attest to that. So, yeah, when you play an online game with Joe that allows exploration, don't expect to finish the storyline anytime soon.
I'm not like super anal like our friend Josh who
couldn't play Blue Dragon because there was too much.
Yeah. So, but I still like to see, like, the first thing I'll do in an area, if there's a map that you have to uncover by traveling, the first thing I did in Submerged was I went around the edge. Mm-hmm. And go figure, that's the first achievement I got for hitting all the borders. Right. But I want
to
see...
That's exactly what I tried to do in Fallout 4 when I started playing that, too. It was just like, I don't care about the main story. I'm just going to go as far east and as far south as I can. And just, yeah, there's definitely something... You know, it's almost like modern Pac-Man-ish of just uncovering locations, and just every location I shove on a map is something that feels satisfying to me, even if I don't go and look at the location. And Fallout and Skyrim they're both very good at that. It's like, hey, you found this new spot. I just like tallying up the spots that I've discovered.
Yeah, I'm on my fourth playthrough of Fallout. I still haven't gotten the find everything achievement.
You've played through Fallout 4 four times?
Yeah, well, this is my fourth restart, we'll put it that way.
He hasn't played through it. He's played it and then starts over.
Yeah, I've officially finished one storyline once.
Okay.
But I have this ADD thing where it's like, well, I've done enough with this style of playthrough. Let me start over as an asshole. Okay,
and
I've done enough of that.
Everything.
Let me start over as a thief, you know. And mm-hmm. Now I just made a ginger and called him the Red Menace. So.
That doesn't stop being funny to me. I don't know why.
Hey, I'm a ginger. What are you trying to say?
Oh, well, no, actually, I had to apologize to Sean.
Oh, he's backtracking now. Uh-oh.
I'm active duty military, and apparently the ginger is now considered an offensive term.
Oh, really? Well, yeah, not here, isn't.
We're not allowed to say it at work. It's just like calling someone, you know, a racial slur.
Mm-hmm. It does have the same letters.
Oh, God damn it.
There's an awesome song that you should look up by a guy called Tim Minchin about exactly that.
Oh, my
God. I'm going to paste it to you. I'm going to find it.
Oh, my Lord. That.
It comes from ginger. How prejudiced.
Mm-hmm. That never clicked in my head before that they have the same letters. Oh, my God.
There was a video I watched by one of the YouTube guys I follow, and it was just a little short YouTube video called Ginger Snaps. And it was just, yeah, this red-haired guy, they make fun of him enough that he snaps, and apparently all in that world, all gingers can shoot lightning out of their eyes.
Oh, my Lord.
What do you mean in that world? That's that's just how it is.
That's an accurate portrayal of real life.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, Pappy, you're going to get murdered by a ginger with lightning eyes soon.
Well, yeah, now that I've said it that many times, I'm post.
I can't even hear you. You're mumbling that much right now.
I'm going to die.
Yay. See, that's better. You have to enunciate when you're going to die.
See, you've got a ginger cat, Joe.
I have five cats, so I have way too many.
Well, yeah, you're, okay, yeah, no, Every single person we've ever interviewed has commented on your cat, Joe.
Well, it is pretty much. It's more the cat than Joe, so.
Yeah.
That was actually his mustache. He actually groomed it to look like a cat.
For all I know, I'm being interviewed by a cat.
You are. And just surprisingly, if you've ever listened to our show before, you know that Potato makes herself well known in as many episodes as she can by continually jumping on my desk, and I'm amazed she hasn't done it yet tonight.
Or unplugging your Xbox.
Oh, God. That sucked.
Middle of an update, huh?
Yeah, middle of an update. Cat unplugs Xbox by jumping behind TV. She unplugged the entire power strip, so just everything.
Did you have to factory reset? Was that you that was tweeting that?
Yeah, that was
me.
Oh,
man, that's
a party.
Harsh.
And yeah. I just laughed.
Luckily, the majority of my games are on an external hard drive. Unfortunately, all my 360 games are on the internal hard drive, and that's still like 100 fucking games.
Yeah.
I just can't believe you keep all those games installed.
Why? I bought them. I own them. I might as well have them there at my disposal.
I guess that's different, you know, because I look at my games like, okay, what do I think I'm never going to play again? And then I uninstall it.
See, I tried doing that, but too many games, I'm like, I never beat that. I might go back to that one day.
Oh, see, there's a difference. I'm like, I never beat that. I don't feel like playing it anyway.
No, I do what Joe does, too.
It's like, I might do another run of Crimson Dragon one of these days. There's still that chance.
I'm just going to uninstall a game right now.
Just to spite you.
Just uninstall Submerged on the show. And just be like, no. This is what I think of your game.
I don't think I could do that, because that's way too much of an asshole move right there. Plus, I'm enjoying it, so there's no reason for that.
Well, he is threatening to kill you with his lightning eyes. So.
That's fair. There's sometimes we do get, you know, review copies of games, and I play it, and I'm like, all right, I can definitely see the appeal in it, but it's not for me. So, like, 5 minutes after the interview, I'm uninstalling the game.
I'm going to name all those games to alienate those developers.
And I can't because they're uninstalled.
I think that's a real issue now. You know, especially on mobile. Like, we just released another game on mobile. And, man, there is a lot of competition out there.
Yeah.
You know, I can't remember how many apps per day or games per day it is now that get released on the App Store, but it's, you know, it's in the hundreds, I think.
So I'm kind of glad that the Xbox and even the PlayStation aren't as bad as Steam yet.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But I imagine that it will get there, though. Like,
I hope not. God, I really hope not. Because there's too many good Steam games that I play like 2 years later because someone else recommended it. Like, hey, did you ever play this? It's really fun. No, because Steam doesn't really advertise their indie section at all. You just have to go sifting. And then, God forbid the categorization, I'll search for a horror game and, like, the first, on page two, there's The Sims Halloween. I'm like, that's, yeah. No. No, motherfucker, that is not a horror game.
Hey, it is The Sims. That's kind of scary.
It's only scary if you do the scary things.
But yeah, exactly. It's a key problem for all game devs is exposure.
Do you think developers are starting to catch on that, like, releasing everything to mobile and PC is just not a viable solution anymore?
I wouldn't say not viable so much as just super risky. Like, the risk factor has now gotten higher and higher. But, you know, Submerged... you kind of have to just stay on top of which market is working best for you. So we didn't anticipate how well Submerged would do on console. We always intended to do it on console anyway, but, you know, it did really, really well on console compared to Steam. So that was a surprise to us. And, you know, we're going to do a mobile version of it ultimately.
Part of that was definitely there's a lot less competition in that genre.
I think so. And Microsoft and Sony is still trying to beat each other as well. still in this process of sort of embracing indies. So, you know, there's another avenue there for promotion if you're an indie.
Prior to Submerged, the only other game that I played that I really found to be genuinely relaxing is Threes.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, everything else on my Xbox is just, you know, kill this, kill that, murder that, run away from that. You know, so it's really nice to have more than one option when I want to chill out now. I appreciate that.
See,
yeah, Threes is a great game, too.
Yeah, but even, I could say Cubot, but Cubot, it's very frustrating.
Yeah.
I can't call that a relaxing game. With Threes, even if you do a terrible score, you're still just kind of chill. Yeah, okay.
I'm always terrible at this game, though, so it's okay.
Yeah, exactly. Well, that's I screwed that up. That was me.
So you mentioned that the game did better on consoles as opposed to PC. Would you consider the overall sales a success for the game?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
What kind of numbers did you do?
Oh, look at us getting curious.
Mm-hmm. I can't help but be curious.
I don't have them at hand. I'm trying to remember, like, I could give you ratios, I think, which was...
Is it over 9,000?
It's over 9,000.
You're fired, Pappy.
Again?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, look, it did well enough to break even.
Oh, that's good to hear.
It's probably done well in... Well, people have asked us about a sequel, too, but I kind of feel like it's a closed universe, and I like it being what it is, as a sort of finished product. If anything, we'll make a game that's sort of like it at some point in the future.
Do a first person shooter about the apocalypse that occurred in that world.
Well, yeah, I'm also
submerged the reckoning.
Oh God.
I don't know if you guys have played Epoch on mobile, but like that was our first game and it was post-apocalyptic as well. And I also worked years ago on a game called Fallout Tactics, and that was post-apocalyptic. And if you like, Bioshock is a post-apocalypse. So I've done a lot of post-apocalyptic stuff. It's kind of nice to maybe move away from that for a bit and do something else.
Pre-apocalyptic.
Pre-apocalyptic. During the apocalypse.
I think that's per-apocalyptic. Per. Well, that's what, actually, now that I think of that, our latest one, which is called Danger Dodges, is the mobile one about meteorites falling and you got to dodge out of the way. So that's kind of during the apocalypse. And God, I can't get away from the apocalypse.
Your next game is just going to be about working at an office.
Yeah, that's right. Grocery shopping.
Just Office Simulator 2019.
What was that Oculus Rift game at MAGFest where you were just a cashier and all you did was scan products and slap people?
I wanted to try it, but every time I went by it, the line to play it was... Just
yeah. No. Yeah.
Big enough that I didn't
like,
want to
I
stand there.
I want to play a game where I slap people.
Yeah, that's really
with a rift on my head.
Tells you about the core fantasy that people like. Just there, it's like if I was a clerk, I would just slap people.
I feel like if I made an Oculus Rift game where you just got to you put in your country of origin, and then you just got to slap your government leaders. I think I would make billions of dollars, you know. It's like, okay, you know, I'm from Great Britain. Here's all your current parliament, you know, slap away. You know, I'm from America. Here's all your senators and House of Reps, slap away. I think I could make good money that way.
I think you're onto something.
Well, it's a good thing that we're talking with a game developer right now. Well,
you couldn't do it with India because they straight up fist fight in their parliament. So,
oh, God.
They beat me to it.
So you mentioned Danger Dodgers. Tell us about this game. What is this game about that you're working on?
Well, so it actually came out last week, and we're lucky enough to be in the best new games on the App Store. So that's nice. But the genesis of this one was we finished Submerged, and then the other two founders of Uppercut both just happened to be having babies around that time. So it was like, well, we need a game that we can make without a lot of their input for, you know, a couple of months while they have babies. So we thought we'd just make a short, fast, fun mobile game. So that's what Danger Dodgers is. It's a free-to-play game. The whole point of it is just to avoid a storm of meteors that are constantly falling and see how long you can do that for. And we've, you know, it's I really like the art for it. It's got this kind of cute sort of claymation-y sort of style. And our main character is an alpaca, because you know, the hell with it. Why not? Why not have an alpaca?
Not?
But yeah, it was a lot of fun to make, and it's just a simple score chaser. But I really enjoyed making it.
I might have to pick that up and try it out.
Well, it is free, so it will cost you nothing.
I don't know. That's a steep price to ask.
Mm-hmm. Well, have you guys? It uses the Crossy Road model. Like, that's how we make money. Is if you guys have played Crossy Road at all, we always really liked that model of cosmetic changes. So you can't actually change your score by paying money, but you can get a different character if you want to, and otherwise we're supported through ads.
I've heard of Crossy Road, but I have never played it. I'm not much of a mobile gamer. Mm-hmm. I do own an iPad, but I pretty much only use it to record the show anymore. And I own a Windows phone, so nobody likes us.
Yeah, you're on your own there.
Yeah. One of the top free apps is still Talking Tom, and that came out in, 2009?
I don't know. I've already made it my mission that anytime a new Xbox-supported game comes out on the Windows phone, I'm buying it. Just because if developers are still taking the risk to put out an Xbox game, I want to thank them for it.
Mm-hmm.
So, but thankfully or unthankfully, I only have to do it once a month anymore, which is sad.
See, we go where the Unreal Engine goes, basically, because we're not a tech heavy studio. There's only six of us. So we're a small studio, and where Unreal works is where we release games. So sadly, no Windows Phone, man.
Yeah, but that way you can focus on the game itself.
Well, that's right. That's right. It's something we've learned over many years, really, is the less you want to modify the base engine, the more you can focus on exactly that, focus on the gameplay and work to the engine's strengths.
Or, you can just be like Bethesda. No matter what you do, everything clips.
just shrug. The games are one universal shrug.
You're going to play our game no matter what, so just deal with it.
That is fair, for that. When you occasionally have a disembodied eyeball and mouth talking to you because the rest of the person didn't render. Mm-hmm. Oh, well.
Bear floating in the sky. I had a lot of bears floating in the sky in 4.
That's actually horrifying, because those things are tough to kill.
Well, it's kind of scary, because I think I actually think every time I encountered one, I then encountered a Deathclaw. So I'm like, I wonder if the Deathclaw threw the bear in the... Who knows? But you just shrug and move on.
Or run away.
Yeah, it's true.
Either one works. So is Danger Dodgers going to hit console? Danger Dodger HD, The Reckoning?
That's a good question. Ryan was talking about doing a multiplayer version where you just keep pushing each other into the path of the meteors, and that could be fun. I don't know. Yeah. I don't know.
We've played quite a few multiplayers where you get to mess with the other guy, and it's been nothing but fun.
Mm-hmm. Have you guys tried Gang Beasts?
No.
That might be PC only currently, but I highly recommend Gang Beasts. That's a bunch of fun.
Nope, Pappy, that one's on you.
All right. Yeah, because I know Clusterpuck is still one of my favorite when I actually am in Joe's living room, because you get to mess with each other, pop each other, and all that stuff.
Mm-hmm. Well, Gang Beast is literally you get to pick each other up and throw each other out into the void, or you're fighting on top of trucks, so you throw each other onto the road.
It's the best part of Mario Party.
Yeah, exactly.
Throwing each other into the road.
I'm just throwing each other off.
You stole my star. I am going to literally pick you up, take you outside, throw you into the road, and watch a truck run over you, because fuck you, you took my star.
I'm surprised that hasn't happened yet.
I'm sure it has.
Well, you can do it in Gang Beasts.
So what is Uppercut working on for the future? What is happening after Danger Dodgers now that that's out? What's coming next?
We're in the throes of prototyping, basically. So I don't have a definitive answer for you. We're looking at first person ideas and more puzzly things. Or there's always Epoch 3 is sort of something that sits in the background and kind of waits to be made at some point.
Are you looking to keep the next game on mobile or Steam, or are you looking to make something console release again?
I think we're definitely leaning towards PC and console. I don't think we're going to do another mobile one right away. But if we, you know, we'll be looking for cross-platform. So if we do one, it'll be PC and console, just because it's the best way as a developer to sort of hedge your bets, you know, and try and reach as many people as possible.
Hey, we like to hear that because I'm the only PC guy.
Yeah.
Yeah, right. See, I used to be a console guy for a very long time, but frankly, once we had to get PCs that could run Unreal 4 so we could develop on it, I played a hell of a lot more PC games now.
Yeah, I mean, I love playing Steam games, but I feel like there's types of games that I genuinely enjoy more on a console versus on a first-person shooter. I know people are always like, no, you need to have the keyboard and mouse. I'm like, no, I really prefer the joystick, you know, the dual analog controllers and all of that. But then you got all those games that are like a Mech Warrior game. Yeah, that's going to be better on PC because you can hotkey the entire keyboard.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that reminds me, we were trying out the game Brigador, as we're hoping to do an interview with him, the creator of that, coming up. And there's no gamepad support for it. So I'm trying to play it with a mouse and keyboard, and I'm losing my goddamn mind because I hate trying to use a mouse and keyboard. Like, WASD to move just doesn't work with my brain. So trying to turn and walk and aim, I can't do mouse and keyboard. I just want to have a controller, push a direction, and hey, I go that direction.
Yeah,
Brigador, is that what it's called?
Yeah, Brigador. I enjoyed it. Yeah. I had no problem with the WASD, but I think it's the kind of game where you could give controller support and not lose anything.
Yeah, it looks like a twin stick shooter in a lot of ways.
Yeah, it's like a mech twin stick shooter, but mapped to keyboard and mouse, and it's just my brain.
I don't know. For me, the important thing is I can destroy everything.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I do love that everything is destructible in that game. It's really cool. I know it's still early access. I'm hoping to have the creator of that come on and talk with us. He gained some.
You can harangue him about not having
gamepad support in.
Well, he gained some popularity recently because someone was talking about the price of his game, which I was going to ask about the price of your game and if you think that was an issue with some gamers out there, but he also has his priced at $20, and someone was like, oh, well, I would buy it at like $15, and he then proceeded to like make a list of different items that were more expensive than his game, and included on that list, which is where everyone kind of started talking about it, was a Nickelback poster on Amazon cost more than $20. Yeah. And that alone, it gained my attention. It's like, if this guy, like, that is how you sell your game to me. Like, that you believe in your product that much that you're like, you know, we're cheaper than a Nickelback poster. You can buy us. We're okay.
And you can have a lot more fun with a game than a Nickelback poster.
Yeah, look, it's a good question, and it comes up all the time. And every game we've released, other than the free ones, you know, people have somebody's come out and said, oh, I don't think it's quite worth what you're asking, but it's worth X. And, you know, you always wonder where their reasoning is for that X.
Yeah, and it's such an ambivalent thing, too. It's like, well, I'd pay $8.99 for this. It's like, why? Why $8.99? You know?
Yeah. Well, I think part of it comes from, like, every person's different, and every person can afford a certain amount. So sometimes I think it's motivated by, look, I really want this thing, but I can't afford it. But a lot of the other times, it's just this weird sort of
I think Steam sales have also given people a warped sense of what's worth it. Because I work with a guy who, straight up, he only buys one or two games during the year, and then when this summer Steam sale happens, he drops like $400 and gets 1,000 games.
Right.
And it's to the point where it's like, do you even play all of them? He's like, no, I try and play a little bit of all of the things, but, you know, I just make a list throughout the rest of the year of what I'd like to give a try, and then I buy it when it's 35 cents. I'm like, well, you realize if everyone thought like you, we wouldn't get new games. At least buy the ones that you really want to play. You know what I mean? Like, come, don't be that guy.
I think there's just always going to be that guy. As long as it doesn't become the majority, then, you know, the industry itself will still be viable for game makers. If it became the majority, yeah, we'd be screwed, man. Like, we can't. I think that I read that guy's article, and yeah, it's good to educate people, I think, on how much games cost to make.
Yeah, I mean, seriously.
It's not immediately obvious.
Yeah, and a lot of the smaller developer teams or the indie guys, they're like, yeah, I'm putting everything into this. Like, it's not even money at this point. It's I've put my entire life, my free time, my girlfriend, it just pretty much doesn't talk to me right now because I've spent 90 hours a week making this thing. You know, show your support. Show your money.
We spent our first year as a company not even paying ourselves and burning through our savings. So, you know, we still haven't fully, I don't think, actually gotten back the money from that first year in terms of our salary. So, yeah, people put a lot of blood, sweat, and tears into things. So it's frustrating to see people devalue them. But it's not really any one person's fault. The way Steam has gone and mobile has gone, you know, that's started to set some expectations. The only response to that really is you either got to make your games cheaper to match it so that somebody who's only willing to pay 99 cents, you can still make money that way, yeah. Or you just make the best game you can and charge what you think it's worth.
But I feel those guys who are like, I don't want to pay more than $2 for a game. Well, then I don't feel we should ever get more than $2 worth of a game.
Yeah.
Yeah, for me, I mean, I think mine's a little more open. I always compare games to film. If I'm willing to drop $15 on a Blu-ray that I'm going to watch once, maybe twice, then I should be willing to drop $15 on a game that I can get 2 to 4 hours worth out of. And anything more than that mm-hmm. is a bonus, you know. Mm-hmm. So, but I think as part of the older generation, I kind of have that comparison I can make.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's – we're probably speaking from a past experience that doesn't exist anymore. Like, yeah. I'm sure my daughter won't. Just the other day, my daughter said to me that there was an app that she really, really liked. She loved using it, but there was an IAP to buy it without ads, and it was like $3. And she said that was too much. I'm like, well, where did you get that from? Like, yeah. Haven't I taught you anything? But, you know, for her, it was too much. It was because it was $3 she didn't have. So.
I guess when you don't have the amount that's being asked, and no matter what it is, it's too much.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I guess phrasing is important too. It's like, yeah, I would like to buy this, but I don't have the money. It's different than, oh, that's just too much money.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, that's what I said to her was like, it's not too much. It's that you need to learn to save, for example. Save some money up and buy it.
Be so, like my little brother and always raid my change jar whenever you're short on cash.
So for people who think that Submerged is too much, what would you say to them?
Fuck you!
Don't buy my shit, you son of a.
Yeah, man, I don't know because it's so hard to. It's just really difficult to explain why you would put any one price on anything. You know, when we priced it, we were like, "What seems to be an equivalent value that's current in the market for this kind of game?" And it wasn't like, hey, we need to charge this much money in order to make our money back because you don't know how many units you're going to sell anyway. So it wasn't from that point of view. It's really just you're trying to sort of guess where it should sit in the market as it stands. And we feel like it's a, you know, you obviously feel like it's a valuable experience and, you know, a value for money thing. So yeah, I don't know what you say to someone who thinks it just costs too much. Like, it is what it is.
I got some though. If someone really thinks it looks good and would like to try it, but then goes, "Well, it's too much," then I'm just going to say, "Well, you're missing out," because it's a fun game.
Thank you. That's awesome to hear.
I just enjoy talking about how developers price their games in their minds after reading about the guys from MetaNet Software who did N++ and how they not only came to the decision of how to price their game, but also how they previously priced N Plus on the Xbox 360 and some of their regrets. And they were talking about they priced N Plus at $9.99 on the 360 because everyone else was pricing it at $9.99. And they were upset because after they did that, the common price for games kind of bumped up to $14.99. And they were upset that they only priced it at $9.99 because they could have made more money. And
yeah,
to me,
that's
like, that's just seems like a shitty, douchey answer to give people. Like, well,
but it's the fair answer because that's how they make their money.
But it just how it came across just seemed dickish.
But I can see where they're coming from, Joe, because it's like if you let's say if I bought a used game off of you for $10 and then you went on eBay and saw that it was going for $15, you'd be like, fuck, I could have made $15 off of this. That's the natural reaction when you're
I guess it was the tone of how they wrote it up and explained it. Like, they were even saying that they originally wanted N++ to be $30, but they settled for $20, and in their mind, their game was worth way more than what they were. It had an air of egotisticalness to it.
Yeah, but the market would speak for that. If they had set it at $30 and it barely sold, then they'd have weren't.
Well,
that's the reality of it, too. And we kind of went through something vaguely similar with Epoch 1 and 2 because they're premium games on mobile, so they're fully paid. And so the first one, man, I'm not going to get this right, but the first one was something like $5, and I think the second one we put out at $9 because we legit thought, we put a ton more work into the second one. We spent more time on it. We had more employees working on it, and I think overall it's a much better game than the first one. But when we put it out there at $8, we got slammed. People were pissed that it wasn't the same price as the first one. And I think it all comes down to you're trying to price it for what you think the market will pay, not just what you think it's worth. So if you put it out cheaper, like the N Plus guys, it sounds like that's what they feel like, is they realize that the market would have paid more for it and they just guessed wrong. And that can be frustrating because, you could have made more money. I can see why that would be annoying. Maybe they could have expressed it better.
Well, with N++, even at $20, it flopped. It sold poorly on the PS4, and it apparently hindered any plans for it to leave there for quite a while. I think it's just now starting to get over to Steam, and the backlash of the whole time for N++ was that $20 was just too high of a price for what people still in their mind consider a free flash game, which despite how many stages are in there and how much time you could spend in the game, it's just the perceived value of games is just such an interesting subject to me, because hearing from players and hearing from developers, the two sides, it's just I wonder how developers settle on their price and if they feel like it's a good middle ground, or if they're pricing it lower than they want because they think that it might not sell at a higher price, or if they maybe regret that they sold it at the price they did. I know some of the guys that we've talked to, they've eventually lowered their price because the game initially didn't sell too well, a launch price, and they saw a big bump in sales when they dropped it. And just the whole subject is just interesting to me.
Well, that's actually when we screwed ourselves on Epoch 2 because we put it out at a price higher than the market was willing to pay, so we lowered the price not long after it had been released, and of course we got absolutely dinged, and I think rightly so, by all the people that had bought it in the first place at the higher price. So you've got to learn these things in going forward. If we were ever going to do it again, we would launch it at a lower launch sale price. And that's the way you do that. So you go, okay, it's going to be at this low price that everybody wants, but only for the first week, and then it gives you the the ability to then go back up to a higher price. And this is, well, there are people who are way smarter than me who've probably got this down to a science, but for us it's more of an art, and we got to feel our way through it every single time we do this. And we navel gaze a lot and try to figure out where the right price point is for everything we work on.
Well, I'm while we're talking, I'm actually surfing Steam by highest price, and the stuff that's like $500 and stuff like that is all Game Maker stuff. But I did find that Serious Sam is $99.99.
Which version? The original version?
The 2001 First Encounter.
Huh.
The second encounter is $100.
Weird.
Yeah. And I'm looking at, Star Wars Collection, $100. But that gets you, like, 8 games. That makes sense. But, there are some people who I feel have definitely overpriced their games. Marvel Puzzle Quest, Nick Fury's Doomsday Plan is $100 because you get hero points. Like, come on, man. Someone actually dropping $100.
That's in-app purchase stuff, so.
That's crazy.
What are you familiar with what Frozen Byte did with their game Shadwen? Or I don't even know if that's how you say it. Their initial price for the game is $35. But they just held a demo event where people could download a demo of the game and play through it. And everyone who played it, their score in the game would go to a community score, which would lower the launch price of the game. And because of all the people downloading and playing the demo, the game is actually going to be launching at $14.55 instead of $35.
Interesting.
And I think that's not only an interesting way to get a sale price for the game, but it seemed to me like that's a great way to get some publicity for the game, is that you're getting all these people to try your game to lower the price of the game. And
they also feel like they got some buy-in then too, like they affected that, so maybe they should buy the game at that price.
Psychology. Yeah,
I've seen there's all kinds of experiments. There was somebody, I think last year, who released a game on the iPhone, and they made it publicly known that the launch price was just that, and every month or every update, they were going to up the price by $1. So ultimately, you don't know how expensive this app is going to be ultimately, but the idea is, hey, right now it's as cheap as, if you buy it now, it's the cheapest it'll ever be for you.
Yeah.
If you wait, it'll get more expensive. I don't know how that worked out for them, but that shows you the kind of experiments that people are trying just to try and get around this pricing problem.
Yeah, I know one year, like back when the iPhone was new, someone did a whole the most expensive app, and it was like $1,000. And it didn't do shit. It was just so you could brag that you had a $1,000 app on your phone.
It was the rich guy app,
Yeah. Now, here we go. The most expensive Steam game, if you include all DLC, is $3,600.
Isn't that like a train simulator or something?
Boom, perfect. Train Simulator 2016. Yeah.
Well done.
Yeah, I own it, all the DLC.
No, you don't.
The sad thing is, I wouldn't be shocked if I've spent more than that on Rock Band.
Yes.
That's the sad part. But I've been playing Rock Band for 7 years now, so I'm good with it.
Right.
Right, now I'm looking that up.
What?
How much would everything in Rock Band cost you?
Oh, God. I don't even want to know. You know what? Don't look that up.
$6,410 if you bought all the discs, all the instruments, all the DLC, and all the Rock Band Network.
Well, I didn't do that, so.
Not yet.
Yeah.
Now, there's a lot of Rock Band Network stuff I just wasn't a fan of. I don't see myself buying that Grateful Dead stuff either, so.
Yeah, but no, I have a feeling you've spent at least three grand on Rock Band.
Probably.
Nice. Well, that was fun. speaking of which, I did have a question for you that Joe alluded to. When you're not working on your games, what are you playing?
I'm trying to think. All kinds of stuff. So, obviously, I play... Let me just do a quick list. I play a bunch of mobile games. I started playing Clash Royale for the hell of it. Not a huge fan, but the production values are really good. I play a lot of Australian games because I like to support our friends nearby. So there's a couple of ones called Faily Breaks came out last week as well. Basketfall, Flipper Fox. What am I playing on Steam? I've been playing Left 4 Dead recently. Man. Just trying to think of what else I've been playing.
And I know you mentioned Fallout 4.
So. Fallout 4. I've got Phantom Pain is sitting there waiting for me to play it, but I just haven't found the time. What did I play before Fallout 4? I don't know. I played The Witness on PC.
I've heard a lot of good about that one.
Yeah.
Yeah, I can't bring myself to finish it. I enjoyed what I played, but I kind of put it down and then hadn't gone back.
That's 95% of my catalog.
Yeah. Spelunky. I'm a bit behind the times on that one, but I started playing that.
Joe, man, you know just... that one.
Yeah, I'm terrible at it.
Yeah.
I'm not good at it. I remember I played it when it first came out and I just sucked. And now I'm just sucking, but more recently. Sucking. Yeah, I don't know. I try and play as much as I can. Try and play board games too. Like, just try and keep your experiences as expanded as you possibly can.
You like to try a lot of stuff so that you kind of keep in tabs with what's going on in the industry.
That's the theory. You try. I've got XCOM 2 sitting on my hard drive as well, which I haven't played.
Yeah. And then you're like, I'm trying to figure out where to go next, and then some guy releases Flappy Bird and makes millions of dollars, and now I don't even know anymore.
I think I'm pretty much there already. I don't understand the markets at all anymore, so I'm kind of like, you know what, I'm just going to make things I like now, and then hope that
they
have a market
where
I release them.
At least that way you're going to be happy while you're making it.
Yeah, exactly. That's why... Danger Dodges was just fun to make.
There's no way to know what's going to be big next, you know, especially with Twitch taking over what is and isn't big in the indie scene. Mm. You know, you kind of have to hit it on the head, you know, at the right moment.
Mm-hmm.
See, this is where you dive back into the submerged universe and you take the dolphins from the game and you make Flappy Mutated Dolphin. There you go. There's your mobile success.
You're on a winner.
Flappy Dolphin.
No, Flappy Mutated Dolphin. It has to be. You got to get mutated in there.
FMD.
FMD.
People love the acronyms.
Hey, man, did you get FMD on iOS?
There we go.
BRB.
LOL.
Oh, God. OMG.
All right, well, that's enough of that.
Well, I know we're going on about an hour here. I'm not sure if there's anything else that you would like to talk about with either Submerged or anything else that you're working on with Uppercut or any other friends down there that you want to pimp out.
Yeah, I don't have much more to say about ourselves. Like I said, we're in prototyping, so it's going to be a little while before we have anything of actual use to talk about. Yeah, well, most of my local developer friends are all on mobile, so you should totally check out Faily Breaks, I guess. That's I think it's doing really well on the App Store right now, but that's a cute little fun game about losing the brakes in your car and plummeting down a hill.
Yay!
So, yeah, check that one out if you get a chance. It seems to be a theme running with just, like, horrible situations befalling people. That's how we roll.
I'm writing down Faily Breaks right now.
Man, yeah. The next game is going to be getting to the toilet before you shit yourself from food poisoning.
If that doesn't already exist, that's
yeah. Don't shit your pants. It's a Isn't that just like a browser game?
Oh God!
Look it up, Pappy. Don't shit your pants.
We're all typing it in.
Yep. There it is on Kongregate.
Man, Jesus. Yep. The winner is you.
It's like stupidly fun too, because you have to like open the door, you have to take your pants off, you have to, the best part is like you have to put the command shit in to shit, but if you do it like while you're standing up, you lose. So if you do it without taking your pants off, you lose.
Oh shit, it came out in 2009. Wow.
It's a survival horror game. That's fantastic.
Yeah, don't shit your pants.
Oh, that's great.
Do a live play right now.
I got nothing else.
On that note, it has been a pleasure talking with you.
It has been a lot of fun. I feel like our conversation has been a lot like your game, immensely pleasurable and very relaxed.
Oh, that's nice. Nice to hear.
And nobody died.
And nobody died. That's a first.
Wait, is there something I should have been aware of before we started talking?
No, we try not to let you know until it's too late.
Yeah, we don't talk about the unaired episodes.
Hello?
Yeah. All right.
I don't know what the hell happened there. I just
crapped out there for a second.
Yeah, that was weird.
All right. So yeah.
Thank you, Skype, for being all weird.
Skype died.
Skype. You son of a bitch, Skype.
It hurt me. Nobody died. Skype's like, oh yeah.
We'll see about that. I'm going to kill it.
Yeah, no, it has been great having you on the show, sir.
Awesome. Thanks for the invite. Really appreciate it.
It's been a pleasure talking to you. We thank you for coming on and talking with us. Whenever you have anything else to talk about with your future games, hit us up. We'd love to have you back on to talk about it some more.
As soon as I've got something, I will let you know.
Awesome.
Sounds good. So do you have any final words for our listeners?
Please buy our games.
that's a very honest,
direct into the point.
Yeah. Yep.
All right. Have a good one, Ed. It was good talking with you.
Awesome. Thanks, guys. I'll see you later.
Take care.
Yeah, I don't know what that Skype hiccup was. That was weird.
I don't know. I'm just gonna blame Potato.
Probably.
Games.
Yeah.
We have
games.
Other games to talk about.
Games. Gamez.
So yeah, I played Submerged today.
Oh, really? Tell me
about
it.
It's a lot of fun. Gorgeous game. I think people should pick it up.
Good stuff.
Yeah. That's the only game I played that was on your list.
I guess we could tackle one or two other games. Replay, VHS is Not Dead, developed and published by Neko Entertainment. It released on February 24th for $9.99. This seems like something you might enjoy. Possibly. It's a puzzle platformer with rewind time elements.
Oh, Braid-ish?
Braid-ish. There are... it's hard to explain. You control one person, and you do what you need to do, and then you switch to the other... Like, you rewind the scene, and you can switch to the other person... And the first person does what you did.
While you try to make the other person do what needs to be done to move on.
Yes. It starts off easy enough. It gets hard fast.
Yeah, so do I.
Like, really fast. Like, faster than you can.
No. That doesn't happen. No.
The game is cool, but it gets brutally difficult really quick. I haven't gotten that far into it because I'm having a hard time with it. So I don't know if I played enough to give it like a final verdict just because it's kicking my ass that much.
Are you enjoying it?
I'm enjoying it, but again, that's
a good sign
hard.
Yeah.
If I'm being forced to give it a verdict, I would probably have to say a try it just because it's
make
hard.
Sure it's your kind of game before you get frustrated and break a controller.
Yeah, I do like all the different references to like movie genres because everything is like straight out of the 80s where you are renting VHS tapes and you are walking home and you get struck by lightning while you're holding some remote, and you get sucked into the movies, and you have to solve these puzzles to complete the scenes so that the tapes are fixed and the lady at the video store isn't pissed at you for ruining the videos.
That's actually kind of neat, because it's... what was that old 80s... It was an 80s movie where people got sucked into the TV. Maybe
Poltergeist.
It was a Twilight Zone episode. No, maybe it was a Twilight Zone episode. Maybe it was Mom and Dad Saved the World. I don't fucking know.
The game is really cool, but it's not easy. It looks like it could be easy. It's like the pixel graphic-y, happy, cool-looking thing. It's tough. It's going to break your brain. So I think this one would be up your alley, Pappy.
Is it on?
It's on Xbox One. Again, it's Replay VHS Is Not Dead by Neko Entertainment. I definitely give it a try it because if you're into the puzzles and your brain can process what needs to be done, you're going to enjoy the shit out of it. But there's a good chance that you're going to get frustrated and you're going to turn into Shizblacka and you're going to say, fuck this game and turn it off and delete it and never play it again because it could get hard.
I like how it always says that you and your wife played this game. I'm positive your wife doesn't play this game.
Well, she's always signed in, and when I play games, she's just signed in as playing. So
she get the points too?
No.
Oh.
No.
That'd be hilarious.
One other game I could talk about is The Witch in the 100 Night Revival Edition, developed by Nippon Ichi Software, published by NIS America. It is out right now, March 1st, for $39.99 on the PlayStation 4. It is a re-release of the PS3 game, The Witch in the 100 Night. Critically, that game was kind of like a mixed bag. Either people loved it or they just thought it was kind of underwhelming. I am enjoying the shit out of the game. It has a long-ish tutorial section that I wish I could have skipped a big chunk of. But the actual gameplay is a lot of fun. It's more hack and slash RPG instead of NIS is popular for strategy games. Open areas, run around, hack and slash, kill enemies. Every new level you go to, you kind of start over, which could get irritating.
I can see that.
You basically, you could get new, more powerful weapons and upgrades. It's neat that you can have 5 different weapons equipped at once, and when you attack, it attacks with your weapons in order. So you could set up some neat chains, and there's blunt weapons, there's magic weapons, and there's sharp weapons. So you could chain them up. Certain enemies are weak to certain things, so it's always good to have at least one of each in there. As you kill enemies, you earn I believe they're grade points for that level, and when you hit certain areas, you could use those points to increase your attack, your defense, your life. But every time you leave and go back to the hub world, it resets, which kind of gets irritating. There's also a constantly depleting life force kind of thing of like G crystals or G cals, whatever they are.
Constantly?
Yeah. I mean, I haven't gotten to a point where I'm desperate for it, and there are ways to get it back. You can consume weaker enemies to give you more of that life force back. As you eat enemies, your stomach could fill up with garbage, and if your stomach is filled, you can't eat any more enemies. There's a lot of good stuff to the game, but there's just a lot of little niggling little irritations. It's not enough that I don't enjoy the game. I will warn people, though, that the content could be, I don't want to say like, I guess questionable would be the way to put it. It is T-rated, which kind of shocked me a little bit because the main protagonist in the game is like the most evil bitch of a person I could ever say. Like the story of the game is that this witch is a swamp witch and she can't leave the swamp at all.
Okay.
But she wants to basically conquer the world, and the only way to do so is to spread the swamp across the world. And your job as the 100 Knight is to make sure that you could spread the swamp for her to take over everything. And as you come across these other witches, who like, a forest witch or ice witch, whatever else.
A sandwich?
But you have to, you're basically playing the bad guy, the henchman of the bad guy, and you have to take out the good guys. And she's just, like, viciously mean, like, in a weird way. Like, the one that you take out, she's repeatedly calling the other witches, like, bitches and whores. Like, she, after the one that you beat, like, she's gasping for breath, and the witch, Metalia, she, like, just starts kicking her as she's already down and hurt until she, like, starts vomiting, and she's, like, this vomiting whore. Like, I don't have a problem with language in games. It just,
this is a little abusive.
They
dark.
Said whore, like, a lot.
Did you beat the game?
No.
Oh, so maybe you get sick of it and stab her at the end.
I mean, Hopefully. I'm sure that's where it all comes down to, but it's just for being the main character of the game, it's just such a
uncomfortable.
Yeah, that's probably the way to put it. The game, if you can deal with the content, like, it doesn't bother me that much, but I could see where other people could be, like, really...
Yeah, it would actually bother me. I think I would be very not pleased.
It's like how people were focused on how frequently they called Catwoman a bitch in Arkham City.
Yeah.
Like, it just, it bordered on excessive.
But again, yeah, if your main character is kicking someone, calling them a vomiting whore, then there better be a reason for it, and not just because the writers decided that was funny.
Yeah, it just, the game is, it definitely pushes the T rating. There's a lot of censored out profanity, which is kind of funny. The script is pretty good aside from the whole whore and bitch thing. It's enjoyable. I would give it a try. It, chances are, if you own a PS3, it might be better to pick up the PS3 version. If you don't own a PS3, try out the PS4 version. The gameplay itself is solid despite the little annoyances that are there, but it's just fun to play because I enjoy that style of hack and slash gameplay. The script, that's probably the sticking point, where if it could definitely get closer to a deny it based on how you feel about the whole usage of it. And
so maybe if you're curious, at least watch a video.
Yeah.
Right, cool.
I know the PS4 version. Let me see if I could pull up the email quick, because it does have a number of additions with this revival edition of the editions with additions.
Yeah, well, you're looking that up, but what's actually really funny is that, you know, since we were talking about pricing points, I was going through the new release games, you know, and one that came out recently, the Agatha Christie ABC Murders, I clicked on it because I'm like, oh, cool, you know, you get to be Hercule Poirot, whatever, and it's a mystery adventure game. I'm like, oh, really cool, oh, $40, you know what? That's beyond my personal price point.
The funny thing is that I really, really tried getting that for our show, and I subscribed to their mailing lists, and there were issues where, like, I got a dozen of the same email in one day, and then the game came to release, and I just never heard anything again.
Yeah, but I think, you know, you look at a game and you go, well, like I said, do I think I'm going to get that much money out of it? Do I think I'm going to get 8 hours out of that? Maybe not. So I'll put that on my list, and if it goes on sale,
yeah.
For that game, I'll be that guy. But again, you know, for something like, you know, like when Telltale Game puts out the Batman Telltale, bye.
Witch in the Hundred Night, I did find the list of the new features. It has upgraded graphics compared to the PS3. The swampy levels have been updated with new textures, lighting, and models.
How swampier.
Yay. There is a brand new Tower of Illusion. The new area will allow you to offer up your favorite weapons to battle foes whose strength is determined by the strength of the weapons, and you can acquire more powerful loot. if you enter the Tower of Illusion for the first time, you can actually play as Metalia, the viciously evil lady. And then there is alchemy as well. So there are a number of additions to the game. I don't know if it would be enough to warrant a rebuy if you already own it on the PS3, but it's worth checking out if you don't already have it, especially because it's only $40.
Cool.
But you mentioning Agatha Christie, that reminds me that right now, Crime and Punishment Sherlock Holmes is free on Games with Gold. So
right
that
now,
might be
right
something
now?
You'd want to check out.
Right now?
Yeah, like right now.
Right now.
Like it already downloaded for me.
But it's leap year day.
Yeah. Yeah, that's how it works.
Oh yeah, today doesn't actually exist.
Yeah. Today is not real. Right. And then I guess technically because Gunscape releases on Wednesday, we had him on last week, but I guess we could toss out an official verdict on Gunscape. I'd give it a try. It's definitely not for everyone. If you're into the Minecrafty, create your own things, it's worth checking out. But if you're not too big into crafting your own stuff, there's still plenty of reason to play with all the community created stuff. If you're not into pixel graphics, you're not going to dig it because that's what the game is. But I give it a hearty try.
See, that's my problem. I'm very crafty, but the other kind of crafty.
Yeah. But yeah, Gunscape, developed, published by Blowfish Studios. Check out our last episode if you want to hear from them, or two episodes ago. And it releases on March 2nd, so Wednesday, for $20.
Yay. So do I.
And then I think everything else here, we have to wait a bit.
Yeah, so we're going to have another nice show for you on Thursday.
Yeah,
I had to stop. I'm like, what day? What day is this?
Every day. Every day's
okay,
podcast day.
3 days day. From now, it'll be another podcast.
Every day is podcast day at the SML podcast.
Help me.
And Thursday is when we should be talking to the guy from Brigador. So,
yay.
It's good stuff. Good stuff.
All right. And on that note, I'm going to go eat. Bye.
I didn't announce music.
Fuck.